A gorgeous day outside. Beautiful day for baseball. We'll have that later this evening. But we have a full program with you all the way up until the time we step aside for UT Baseball at 6:15. And what we have for you starts with a look at some spring practices and how they've gone around the SEC. So Adam Sparks will join us from the Tennessean a little bit later this hour to give us the background on the new coach at Vanderbilt and how spring went for the Commodores. We will be joined by Vince Ferrara, who will sit in for hour number two of today's program, his weekly time slot with us. And as part of Vince being with us, we'll get to catch up with former Tennessee assistant, now ETSU head coach Des Oliver. He'll join us right at the start of hour number two. Hour number three, we can talk all things in regards to state of Alabama football as Kevin Skarbinski will join us. And then before hour number three elapses, we will be given a Tennessee football practice report with the one, the only Eric Kane. We'll have your chance to win with a Sports Fix at six. Maybe some comments from John Fulkerson. We'll have all that and more today on Sports Talk. Jimmy Hyams, how are you?
John, I'm doing wonderful. What a beautiful day today.
It is gorgeous. The wind is pretty steady, so
yes.
You might want to go no hat as opposed to hat because you might lose the hat. But anyhow, just be mindful that if you're going to go with the window down, you're going to have to need a comb or a brush.
Yep, it is very windy, no doubt about that. So, well, we've got a big lineup today, and I guess we'll jump to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. John Fulkerson met with the media via Zoom. And I just asked him the question that's been on a lot of people's mind for a long time. Did you have COVID? And if so, did it impact your game? He said, yes, I did. And I think it affected a lot of people. He said that it affected his teammates. He said it affected a lot of people around the country. He said it affected the Tennessee fan base. They wanted to play in front of 21,000 plus at Thompson Bowling Arena, and they played before less than 4,000. He said, I love playing for the fans, and they draw energy from the spectators, but when every team had to create its own energy. He also said that it affected the whole program, and he said that one of the things that had an impact was just team chemistry. They couldn't eat meals together. They could not watch movies together. They couldn't go to events together. And he said that's one of the things that excites him about next year's team is they will be able to do that, and he thinks, therefore, build a better chemistry. One thing he didn't mention, which I think bears bringing up, is that I think a lot of people would agree that Rick Barnes and his staff typically do a really good job with player development. Well, they didn't have that opportunity. They didn't have the off-season workouts and the practices beforehand to develop some of these players, and I think that had an impact as well. But Fulkerson did say that he was going to come back even before he learned about the number two ranked recruiting class Tennessee was putting together. But he said that once he saw it being put together, he got excited about it. And then he said, I wanted to let you guys know, meaning the media and the team know, that I was coming back and I'll do whatever I can to help this team. He said he thinks he can be sort of a player coach because he knows exactly what Rick Barnes wants out of his players. He said he was encouraged by athletic director Danny White saying that Tennessee hopes to play football games at full capacity at Neyland Stadium, so Fulkerson hoping the same thing would happen for Thompson Bowling Arena. He did say that he did not want his career to end the way it did, with him sitting on the bench at the NCAA tournament, not remembering his last game as a Tennessee player after he took that vicious or two elbows from Florida's Omar Payne. He said, I just didn't want it to end that way. I wanted to finish on my terms. The more I thought about it, the more I got excited about returning. Also asked him about this. I said, I saw where CBS Sports had a preseason basketball poll, and when you said you're returning, Tennessee went from 25 to 15. What'd you think of that? He said, I thought we should have been ranked number one. So got a kick out of that. And he said, I'm just kidding. But he did say it was a nice compliment for that to occur. He also said that he's looking forward to doing something he hadn't done in 8 years, and that's not living in a dorm. He lived in a dorm his last 2 years of high school, first 5 years at Tennessee, so that won't be he won't have to do that. And by the way, there's some mock draft out there that's got Tennessee projected to have two players taken in the first round next year, Josiah Jordan-James and Kennedy Chandler. So but anyway, I thought the comments from Fulkerson were pretty interesting and wanted to share those, again, as he met with the media via Zoom earlier today. All right. Another basketball note I want to bring. Joe Lunardi with ESPN has already come out with his first bracket. In his bracketology, he's got Tennessee as a 4 seed in the upcoming NCAA tournament, taking on 13 seed UAB, which I believe is coached by Andy Kennedy. In that region, which would be San Antonio, UCLA is the 1 seed, Memphis is a 5 seed, North Carolina the 6 seed, Baylor the 3 seed, Purdue the 2 seed, and USC the 7 seed. That's all in the South region. In the West region, he's got Auburn as an 8 seed, taking on number 9 Virginia. He's got number 3 seed Arkansas versus South Dakota State. He's got in the Midwest, Kansas is a 1 seed, Kentucky taking on UC Irvine, and then number 10, Florida, taking on number 7, Xavier. And then in the East, there's number 1 seed Alabama against Northeastern and number 9 seed Mississippi State against number 8 Oregon. So that's 7 SEC teams that are projected to be in the NCAA tournament, according to Joe Lunardi. We'll see how accurate he is. Tennessee baseball. John, you mentioned they got the game against Tennessee Tech. A couple of notes about that. Tennessee, since the start of 2019, non-conference games, 60-10. Under Tony Vitello, 36-6 in midweek games. And Tennessee ranks 19th in the nation in home runs. They've hit 44. 13 different players have hit a home run. And with Tennessee, they got Texas A&M this weekend. The games are 7:30 Friday, 6 o'clock Saturday, 2 o'clock on Sunday. Evan Russell's was one of the National Players of the Week by Collegiate Baseball as he had that 3-home run game against Vanderbilt, the Golden Spikes Performer of the Week for the second time, and he didn't get any SEC honors. How about that?
So, yeah.
I guess this is a tough conference, isn't it? He's got 10 home runs, 8 in SEC play. He's got 21 hits this year, 10 are home runs. But, John, his bat has really awakened here, I guess, since pretty much the start of SEC play, or at least the LSU series.
Correct. And as we talked with Tony Vitello, you look at the very specific approach that he has in the batter's box, and I just think that this is something that he's been able to rise to the occasion in a couple of the premier home games for Tennessee. So I just think it's fantastic, and here's hoping that it continues and travels.
Also, a few other notes out there. So the Lady Vols, ranked number 16, they get the win against South Carolina. So they win that series 2-1, 33-7 is the overall record, 6-6 in conference play. They beat South Carolina 4-2. Chelsea Segrin hits a 2-run home run. That was a big blow. She's got 4 this year. Ashley Rogers, the winning pitcher, 19-5, got dicey in the last inning. South Carolina had a runner on third base with 1 out. Then Ashley Rogers hit a batter. Then she got a pop-up, and then she got a fly out to left field. So she ends up getting the win for Tennessee in that contest. SEC women's tennis are playing in Alabama, taking on Mississippi State. Mississippi State won its first-round match. The Lady Vols got a bye the first round. And Mississippi State beat Tennessee 4-3 early this year in tennis. ETSU. So we're going to be joined by Randy Sanders tomorrow to talk about that program. But it was interesting. They were the first replacement team for the FCS playoffs. Now, there were 16 teams in the playoffs, I think usually it's 24. So ETSU sitting there waiting, 4-2, they're waiting to see if they're going to get in. If any of the 16 teams that had been invited opted out, ETSU was in. Nobody opted out. So clearly, if you had a 24-team field, ETSU would have been in. And also with ETSU, we got Dez Oliver coming up. They had as many as 10 players in the transfer portal, Bobby Rader told me. And Dez Oliver talked a number of those folks into staying. They did lose the Southern Conference Rookie of the Year. He transferred to Wake Forest to play for Steve Forbes. But a really good job, according to Bobby Rader, of Dez Oliver keeping a lot of those players getting out of the transfer portal, going back to ETSU. A few other notes on basketball. Mississippi State, they have signed North Carolina transfer Garrison Brooks, who was a second-team All-ACC performer 2 years ago. Kentucky's Olivier Saar has declared for the NBA draft. Auburn's Alan Flanagan said he is going to continue his journey at Auburn. So he returns. In football, Missouri linebacker Jamal Brooks is in the portal, and Arkansas wide receiver Mike Woods is in the portal as well. And just a couple of other notes. In NASCAR, Jennifer Jo Cobb was going to make her Cup debut at Talladega. She was not approved. And as I read further, NASCAR has to approve you based on your experience, based on your results, based on your skill level. They didn't approve her. She would have been the first female to run in a Cup race since Danica Patrick in 2018. She has run in the Truck Series, and just some numbers on her. Since 2008, she's had 217 starts in the Truck Series and only one top 10. She's finished on the lead lap twice in the last 46 truck races she's been involved with. She's had 31 starts on Xfinity since 2004. The most recent was 2018. Anyway, she was not granted approval to run at Talladega. We'll see if eventually she might break through and do that. Georgia basketball guard Shavir Wheeler is transferring, but he's also entered his name in the NBA draft without hiring an agent. He led the SEC in assists. The one thing we know is that he's not returning. Well, he's in the portal. He could return to Georgia, but so I shouldn't say he's the one thing we know is he's not returning, but he's in the portal, and he's also entered the draft to test the waters to see if that's the direction he's going to go. And then Steph Curry continues to light it up. 49 points last night, 20 in the fourth quarter, 10 of 17 on threes. In the last 11 games, he's averaging 10 games in April, he's averaging 39.9 points per game. So he's been on a ridiculous tear. And then the TSSAA All-State Girls Basketball. I'm going to touch on the players from this area. In AAA, it was Danae Fritz of Maryville, Kamara Mitchell-Steen at Oak Ridge, Avery Treadwell at Bearden. In AA, Campbell Penland of Northview. On the A level, Braylon McGahey from Cosby and Kelsey Polk of Oneida. On the A level, it was Jordana Ivy at Lakeway Christian, as well as Maggie Vick. And then at Webb School, it was Madeline Ladd and Lachey Dwyer. Also, Gracie Palmer from Brian Christian. And then at Division I AA from Catholic, Sydney Maines, Jayla Greenlee. So congratulations to all those players that made the All-State team. And an NFL note, the Steelers are giving Mike Tomlin a 3-year extension. One other NFL note, John, I saw this and it really surprised me. Alex Smith, he announced his retirement yesterday. He is the only quarterback since the NFL merger in 1970 to record at least 40 wins in the AFC and at least 40 wins in the NFC. The only one that's ever done that.
Wow.
99-67-1 is his career record. I thought that was an interesting note by Alex Smith. And those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
And say hi to Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Howdy. Hey, Jim.
You know, with spring practice winding down, the spring game for Saturday, I'm kind of interested in getting your guys' take on how this spring has gone in terms of what you might think of. Have any of the units, offense or defense, shown some improvement or potential improvement or any signs of, you know, they've had a good spring? And then also, any of the new coaches have you been particularly impressed with now that, you know, they've been on the field now, although you don't see all the practice stuff, but you hear them in interviews and so forth. And then any of the players that are maybe noteworthy in terms of they've had a good spring. So can you kind of just, give me the cliff notes of spring practice?
I'll go over some of the players that have stepped up or have made some progress. When they mentioned Jabari Small, the running back, has done really well. D. Beckwith, also the 6'5 running back. I mentioned when I watched him in practice, he didn't look 6'5, which I think is a really positive thing about him because he runs with lower pad level. Elijah Simmons coming along at the defensive line. And then Byron Young at defensive end. I thought he was an afterthought during the signing class. a junior college player from Georgia Military, has really stepped up and performed well. So those would be some of them. The offensive lineman that's a walk-on, former walk-on from Sullivan, and that's Dane Davis, has done well. I think that Caden Cooper Mace have had good camps. Walker Merrill, the true freshman at receiver, has done well. And let's see, those are the main players that I can think of off the top of my head that have had good camps. As far as the coaches, it's hard not to get fired up when you listen to Mike Eckler. And then he made that comment about how much he loves Knoxville, which is pretty solid. But I'll say this, it's too hard for me to make a judgment on the impact the coaches have had on individual players because I just don't see enough. So that's not fair for me to do that. But I will say this, Jim, and we talked about this with Doc and John. I do think it's a concerted effort by this coaching staff to say pretty much positive, uplifting things about this players, because I think they've been beaten down enough. They've lost enough. They've had their confidence shattered or shaken enough to where I think this coaching staff understands they need to build the psyche of this team, of these players. And I think that's one reason we're hearing so many nice things said about them. Now, that doesn't mean they aren't doing some nice things, but they're not nearly as critical as the previous staff. And we didn't hear the staff that much, but I just think they're saying a lot of nice things at this point. Not that a lot of them weren't true, but I just think they understand this is what this team needs right now.
Yeah, what has stood out to me is very similar to what Jimmy was just touching on. I like the fact that there's been good energy and they have been generous with the compliments and highlighting those that have put in the good work, whether it's the weight room, film room, on the field, you name it. I just think that there's absolutely nothing to lose by just celebrating the group that's working and working so hard as they are. I think the players have done the exact same thing. I think they have been very positive, and I also think some have been forthright with some of their comments on what it was like going through the transition and what it was like for last year, the experience of last season. You had some, I think it was Cedric Tillman, Jimmy, that was talking about it being a redemption year. And so I just think that it's been something to hear the players, and what I appreciate most is the transparency and availability, because you've had no shortage of players. You've had every coach multiple times, or will have by the time we get to the finish line. So I appreciate that aspect. Like Jimmy, I don't have the first idea whether or not this is going to pay off in terms of Tennessee being more competitive than thought going into this season. Still a lot of unanswered questions in terms of exactly how this season plays out in regards to whether or not you have a bowl game on the line or anything along those lines. So I like what I've heard from the players and coaches, and I'll wait to reserve judgment when I get to see the product on the field.
You really answer you. My other question was going to be, which you answered perfectly, was the difference between this coaching staff and the others in terms of trying to be positive, you know, rather than just beat these guys down. You know, I had one of my first bosses, and this was in the business world, used to say, you know, praise in public, scold in private. But Jeremy Pruitt, he threw a lot of guys under the bus in public. And one more, in terms of, is linebacker still the most critical issue, would you say, in terms of, you know, the number of players we lost, the number of players we have? Is that the most critical at this point?
I think position? So. They may end up playing a 6-1-4. My goodness.
Yeah. Or just 7-4, 6-5.
Well, there you go, 6-5. Their transfer portal, injuries, just lack of experience, I think it's a concern. And so I do think that Tennessee is going to run a whole lot of 4-2-5. I really do. And I think that Roman Harrison has a chance to be a nice player, but he hadn't played that much. Jeremy Banks, to me, is a pretty good run stopper. He's not proven that he's good in pass coverage, so he's got to get better at that. I think that is a major concern. They're going to have to try to coach around that. And I think they have some ability up front that can help with that. But I think you hit it. I think linebacker is the most critical position in terms of the lack of talent and depth.
Well, if the 614 catches on, Jimmy, I'll know where it came from.
That's right. Well, if it works.
Yeah, that's right.
If it works.
If it works.
I'm not taking credit for that.
All right. Hey, guys, appreciate it. You guys have a good afternoon.
You too. Sure do appreciate it, Jim. We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, for a very special guest.
We do. It's Adam Sparks. He does a terrific job. He's a sports writer, reporter for the Nashville Tennessean. Covers Vanderbilt, and he wrote about Vanderbilt's spring game recently. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
I'm doing real well. How you guys doing?
Well, we're doing fine. Thank you for joining us. It appeared as though Vanderbilt might be set at quarterback with Ken Seals returning, and he played really well in the Saturday spring game, but so did a backup named Mike Wright. Do you see competition at the quarterback position at Vanderbilt?
That's a good question. Outwardly, they're saying yes. Inwardly, I would say that they know Ken Seals is their quarterback. They want to push him as much as possible. I mean, it's one of these funny things at Vandy is that you're trying to find depth at any position, but the one position you probably don't need it as much is quarterback. Ken Seals broke Vandy's freshman passing record last year. He's been compared a whole lot to Kyle Shermer, the all-time career passer there, and I think that's probably an apt comparison. But they didn't need depth at that position, but that's kind of what they have. They could use Mike Wright. If you know, this was the pros, they trade Mike Wright for a couple of defensive linemen, but they don't have that option right now. But yeah, Mike Wright is he can run the ball. They used him a little bit in goal line packages last year, and they'll be creative in trying to give him some kind of role in the offense. I think it'll still be Seals' job, though.
How much different is this offense under Coach Clark Lee than it was under Derek Mason?
It's a good question. It's hard to say now because what they're saying and I think what we all see in the fall are a little different. Clark Lee has said the whole spring that he wants to be a power running team. He wants to establish the run and all these sort of things, and he has sort of a Notre Dame mentality, so almost like a Big Ten mentality. And that was somewhat what Derek Mason had. He wanted a power-running football team. But if you look at his personnel, I always like the distinction in covering Vandy of which players would be really would be good players on another SEC team. And offensively, that would be Ken Seals, the quarterback, Chris Pierce and Cam Johnson, both wide receivers, and probably at least one of their tackles. So if your quarterback's good, you have a couple good wide receivers, and I'd even say Ben Bresnahan, their tight end, and a tackle, that sounds like a passing football team to me. So I think at this point, Clark Lee's playing a little bit of possum there and saying he wants to run the ball, knowing personnel-wise he's probably going to have to go with the pass in the fall. And his new offensive coordinator, David Ray, he was a wide receivers coach with the Arizona Cardinals last year, NFL guy. He comes out of the Cliff Kingsbury School of Offense. So, again, that's more of a tempo passing type of philosophy. So I think you'll see them try to run it, but they'll ultimately be a passing team in the fall.
Adam, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Sure do appreciate the time. Going back to Coach Lee being hired, what did you think? I mean, there were a lot of us that thought, okay, COVID year, there's not going to be a whole lot of change, but it seemed like there was even more change than anybody would have ever expected with considering the unique landscape. But what did you think in terms of Lee being tabbed to take over the Vanderbilt program?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few surprises in this. Candace Lee took over as the athletic director last year, and she was the number two to David Williams for so long. The thought was, she would come in and just kind of keep everything as is with the coaching staff, especially during the COVID year. She had a really good relationship with Derek Mason over the years, but she fired Derek Mason, a good friend of hers. She fired the women's basketball coach recently, and we didn't see that happening either. So she's got a shorter leash on these coaches than we thought. Clark Lee was, I'll have to give Vandy credit. A lot of times usually Vandy has not hired the obvious choice. Clark Lee is a Nashville native. His family's pretty prominent in town. Knows a ton of people, was recruited here for a long time as Notre Dame defensive coordinator. If, you know, Vandy would not have been in the running for Clark Lee had he not been a Nashville native. They kind of lucked into that. He could have got a better job, so to speak. So it was the obvious choice if they could get him, and that's who they got. It's probably a good hire, but I've said this many times over the years about Vandy coaches. There's not much difference between 5-7 and 7-5. And if you can go 6-6, 7-5 at Vandy, you're a really good coach. If you go 4-8, 5-7 at Vandy, they don't think you're a good coach, but I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between those two.
The expert analysis, as offered on your Twitter account, was, I thought, spot on. So was it more in the spring game of the defense being oof or the offense being whoa?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this offense was mediocre last year. I mean, they had some good spots. Ken Seals was one of those. But that's not an offense that should be racking up a ton of yards against you. And so I have more concerns about the defense than anything. Clark Lee tried to explain it away and say they're being very vanilla and context matters and these sort of things. But, you know, Vandy's offense is just okay, and they were going up and down the field on this defense. There were very few stops at all in the game. The offense actually didn't even have its offensive coordinator. The OC, he had a child earlier that day, a newborn child, and so he missed because of the birth of his kid. So
wow.
They didn't even have the primary play caller out there, and still were racking up just, you know, I think they had something like 1,000 yards of total offense in a 2-hour scrimmage. So I would be more concerned on defense. And if you look at the defense, last year they lost their best two pass rushers going into the NFL draft. They already had a lot of questions at linebacker last year, and they got torched in the secondary. So, you know, you needed some good things out of that defense, and I just didn't see them in the spring game.
I guess Adam Sparks, Nashville, Tennessee, and covering the Vanderbilt spring game. What skill position players do you see on offense other than the quarterbacks, because the best running back from last year into the transfer portal?
Yeah, Keon Henry Brooks, leading rusher, he's gone. Ramon Davis is a Temple transfer. He was an all-freshman in that conference a couple of years ago. They were fortunate to get him in the offseason. If he's deemed eligible immediately, then he's going to help them on offense. They're still going to have some depth issues at running back, but Cam Johnson is a guy that led him in receiving last year. He was a 4-star guy at a Brentwood Academy here. Picked Vandy over Tennessee and Georgia and a few others coming out of high school. He's a very good possession receiver. And Chris Pierce is a tall, bigger receiver, very physical. Had a lot of highlight reel type plays last year. If they get more consistency out of him, I think they'll be good there. Again, I think they can throw the ball, especially in an up-tempo look. Ken Seals loves that. They had their most success of that last year. But if you look at a team that wants to throw the ball or at least can throw the ball, and then you look at a defense that's going to give up a whole lot of yards and points, you're looking at a Vandy team that's, you know, in kind of 45-31 type shootout. And traditionally, that's not the way that Vandy gets to bowl eligibility. Derek Mason always thought of, you know, winning games 17-13, which they did a few times. But maybe this will be a funner brand of Vandy football to watch if that's the way they go.
By the way, going back to the athletic director, Candace Lee, in the short leash, do you think that's in part because she was an athlete herself and that she kind of knows what she wants and she can recognize what she thinks is subpar performance?
You know, to some extent, she was compared to David Williams a whole lot, but I think there was a misnomer. David Williams was the longtime athletic director, was an academic guy. His background was in academics. He was a law professor, and I think you're on the right track. Candace Lee was a women's basketball player. She was on some Elite Eight teams. She was a team captain for the Vandy women's team, and she sees things more as we're in the SEC. We should be good at sports. We should be competitive in sports. And so she latches onto the academic side and all that you have to have in that culture at Vandy. But I would say she leans a little bit more towards the frustrated fan base than she does the academic side. And the frustrated fan base over the years at Vandy is that we know you're not going to be Alabama in football and Kentucky in basketball, but you should be competitive, you know, try to get to the middle of the pack in some years in those sports. And I think she feels that way too. And I think that sort of led to her quick trigger in those coaching changes, if you'd call it a quick trigger.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect terminology in terms of the long-suffering fan base. But, Adam, what do you think it means to the fans that there has been this $300 million commitment to Vanderbilt football and basketball?
Well, to the cynics, and there are plenty, and I think there's good reason for that. A lot of people say, here we go again. Another promise, another pledge that things are going to be built and all that. But, you know, I was at the spring game, as you mentioned, the other day, and in the end zone, there was a construction crew. Now, it's just to put something in the end zone, some new premium seating on what used to be the berm there. But it's just something, that's a small project, but it's just something to actually see them say, we're going to do these things. And then 2 weeks later, you actually see a construction team doing that. They'll have a team facility probably in the end zone of Vanderbilt Stadium. They'll have a basketball facility, team facility, locker rooms, all those sort of things outside of Memorial Gym. They're going to have a few other things. They had to go one way or the other with the money that they were going to get. They already have $200 to $300 million. They could either put it into the stadium and make a few cosmetic changes, or they could put it into the team and the student-athletes and, you know, the day-to-day stuff, weight rooms, locker rooms, offices, all the sort of things. And they went with the second one. I think that was the smarter one. Number one, it affects recruiting a lot more because these players see those facilities every day as opposed to, you know, six Saturdays a year. And the other side of that is just it's easier to do. You can take $300 million and do a lot with it if you're doing it on a team facility. Put $300 million or even half that into a stadium, you could do some things, but you're not going to completely rebuild a stadium with that amount of money. So it just made sense for them to do that.
Adam, one other thing, and I know this is hard, but if you had to project right now, what would you say Vanderbilt's win total will be in football?
I think they'll probably go 3-1 in non-con. They've got UConn, Colorado State, and ETSU, and Stanford. So if they go 3-1 in that, they steal one in the SEC. It's a 4-8 year. People at Vandy wouldn't necessarily like that, but they were 0-9 last year. 4-8 this year, if they make some progress, change the culture, then you're talking about a team that could win 5 or 6, maybe Clark Lee's second year.
Hey, Adam, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for that look at Vanderbilt spring football.
All right, guys. Good to be on.
Thank you, Adam.
Adam Sparks with the Nashville Tennessean covering Vanderbilt.
Come John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And, Jimmy, we always look forward to our weekly visit with Vince Ferrara, but we also have another special guest joining us, as Vince does.
Yeah, we've been working on getting Des Oliver, the former Tennessee assistant, now the head coach at ETSU, and he said 4:05 was his time slot, so we've got him right in there with Vince's segment for 1 hour, but we look forward to visiting with Coach Oliver.
So both Vince and Coach Oliver join us next on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.